Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Shaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatade Shatarane. Welcome everyone. Thank you all very much for kindly coming. This seminar is occasioned by some controversy that has arisen regarding the publication of Srila Prabhupada's books. And apart from controversy, it's just valuable for everyone to understand something about how Srila Prabhupada's books are published. You won't find any bashing of the first edition of Bhagavad Gita as it is in this seminar. It's an excellent book. I worked on it among other people, and BBT publishes it. We also publish the second edition, which we believe is better. And in this seminar, you'll find out why. We'll deal with some often stated objections to the second edition at some length. And let's get started. I'm going to begin with a recording of Srila Prabhupada's speaking the conclusion to Bhagavad Gita as it is, the introduction. This introduction is the only portion of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Part of Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srila Prabhupada personally typed, and part he dictated. The introduction he spoke, and I can tell you when if I look in my crypt sheet. February 19th, 1966. Srila Prabhupada apparently recorded it himself. The entire introduction is available from the Bhaktivedanta archives as an audio recording. And it's the only part for which the audio, Srila Prabhupada's original audio of Bhagavad Gita as it is available. All the rest of it, even when I joined in 1968, no longer existed. Okay? So we're going to listen to the end of Prabhupada's introduction, and we'll have the advantage of being able to see it before our eyes at the same time. Now I should explain what's going on here. The right-hand column is just what you'll hear. It's just a transcription of Srila Prabhupada speaking. The left-hand column shows you what was published in both editions. The ordinary type is as it is in the first and second editions. The part that's crossed out in red appears only in the first edition, but not the second. It's been deleted from the second edition. And the part that's in bold, like this, appears only in the second edition and not the first. Clear enough? Okay. So we'll listen to Srila Prabhupada speak this, and I would suggest that you keep your eyes on the left-hand column. The right-hand column is just what you're hearing. Come in. Just watch the wires. Come on in. A chair for Lokabandhu Prabhu, please. Okay, so again, we're going to play Srila Prabhupada speaking this introduction. And keep your eyes on the left. It takes about 10 minutes for us to go through this, but I think as you do hear it, it will clarify some things for you. By the way, at any time, if you have any questions during the seminar, feel free to ask. But I think we'll just go through this recording. I won't say anything, and we'll just save the questions till the end. But if you do have questions, jot them down.
Gita is a transcendental literature which one should read very carefully. Gita Shastra Midam Punyam Japatet Prajata Puman. And the result will be, if he properly follows the instruction, then he can be freed from all miseries of life, all anxieties of life, bhaya sukadi vivarjito, all fears of life. In this life, as well as he'll get a spiritual life and the next life. Gita dhyana sila sa pranayama para pranayama parasacha naiva santi papani putbajan kritanicha. Another advantage is that if one reads Bhagavad Gita very sincerely and with all seriousness, then by the grace of the Lord, reactions of his past misdeeds will not act upon him. The Lord says loudly in the Bhagavad Gita, in the last portion, Aham tam sarupapipa mokhoishyami madhav. The Lord takes the responsibility. One who surrenders unto the Lord, he takes the responsibility to indemnify from all reactions of sins. Mara nirmochanam pungsham jalasnanadi dine dine. Jalasnanam dine dine sakrit gitam musisnanam samsaram malam nasanam. One cleanses oneself daily by taking bath in the water. But one who takes one's bath in the sacred Ganges water of Bhagavad Gita is the dirty material life is altogether vanquished. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimannain Shastra Vistrai Jaha Sayam Padmanavasya Mukha Padmat Vinishtita. Because Bhagavad Gita is spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, therefore people may not read all other Vedic literatures. Simply, if he attentively and regularly reads and hears Bhagavad Gita, 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 Kartavya, and one should adopt these means, by all means, Gita, Gita, Kartavya, Kimannai, Shastra Vistrai, because at the present age, people are embarrassed with so many things that it is hardly possible to divert their attention in all the Vedic literatures. This one literature will do, because it is the essence of all Vedic literature, and especially as spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bharatam mitasadvasam Vishnu bhaktyat vinishtitam Gita Gango Dakam Pitva Punajanma Navidate. As it is said that one who drinks the water of the Ganges, he also gets salvation. Then what to speak of Bhagavad Gita? Bhagavad Gita is the nectar in the whole Mahabharata, and is spoken by Vishnu. Lord Krishna is the original Vishnu. Vishnu Bhakta Vinishtitam. It is coming out of the mouth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Gangodakam, Ganges, is said to be emanated from the lotus feet of the Lord. And Bhagavad Gita is emanated from the mouth of the Lord. Of course, there is no difference between the mouth at the feet of the Supreme Lord, and from a neutral position we can study that Bhagavad Gita is more important than the Ganges water. Sarva Upanishadu Gava Dugdha Upala Nandana Partha Vatsa Sudhir Bhakta Dugdham Gita Mritam Maha. Just this Gita Upanishad is just like a cow, and the Lord is famous as cow boy, and he was milking this cow, Sarva Upanishadam. And it is the essence of all Upanishads, and represented as the cow, and the Lord being expert cowboy, he is milking the cow, and Partha Vatsa, and Arjuna is just like the cow, and Sudhir Bhokta, and learned scholars, and pure devotees, they are to take this milk. Sudhir Bhokta Dugdham Gita Amrita Mahat. The nectar, the milk of Bhagavad Gita is meant for learned devotees. Evam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eka Deva Devaki Putra Eva Eka Mantras Dasha Namani Jnani Karma Karmapi Egan Dasha Devasa Seva. Now, the world should learn from the Bhagavad Gita the lesson. Evam Shastram Devaki Putra Gita. There is one scripture only, one common scripture for the whole world, for the people of the whole world, and that is this Bhagavad Gita. Deva Devaki Putra Eva. And there is one God for the whole world, is Sri Krishna. And Ega Mantrastasya Namani, and one hymn, mantra, one hymn only, one prayer, or one hymn, to chant his name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Ega mantrastasya namani jani. Karmapi ekam tasya devasya seva. And there is one work only, that is to serve the Supreme Personality of God. If one learns from Bhagavad Gita that the people are very much anxious to have one religion, one God, one scripture, and one business or one activity of life. This is summarized in the Bhagavad Gita, that one God is Krishna. Krishna is not sectarian God. Krishna, from the name of Krishna, Krishna means, as we have explained above, Krishna means the greatest prince. So therefore...
Okay. That's the end of that recording. It does end like that, just in the middle of things. So I'd like to say a few things about this. First of all, one thing you're seeing here is very expert editing by my late godbrother, Hayagriva Prabhu, who was a professor of English and whom Srila Prabhupada met when he first came to, or shortly after coming to America. He was the main editor for the first edition, and as you can see, he solved a lot of the... he had a lot of difficult stuff to work with.
Srila Prabhupada's English was not polished American English by any means, and there were so many difficulties in the text, but he did an excellent job. As you'll see, or as I hope you did see already, there's a lot that was left out. He worked without the benefit of an experienced Sanskrit editor, and therefore these verses would not have been familiar to anyone at the time the book was edited, and devotees probably wouldn't even know where to find them. So they were simply left out. All of these verses of the Gita Mahatmya that Srila Prabhupada quotes were simply left out of the first edition of Bhagavad Gita as it is. And as you see, they've all been restored. A curious one is the first one, where you see they didn't know what the verse was, but they recognized one word, bhaya. And they did know a verse that has that word in it. And so they supplied that verse along with its translation. But as you heard, it wasn't the verse that Srila Prabhupada spoke. That sort of thing happened a lot in Bhagavad Gita as it is. Are there any questions that anyone has about any of the other things that went by as we were listening? Yes? Pardon me? The original edition was published. Well, let's go back further. The book was first published by the Macmillan Company in an abridged edition, and that was roughly 1968, roughly speaking. And in that edition, the purports were drastically shortened. Some of them were cut out altogether. The word for word was cut out. The original Devanagari and the Sanskrit transliteration were all cut out because they had a particular format that they wanted to meet. But then the publisher found that the book was selling not badly, and so they were interested in publishing the complete edition, which was published in 1972. And the second edition was published in, if I have it right, 1982. So about 5 years, 4 years after Prabhupada's departure. Any other questions about what we've seen here so far? Manaji. Yes, he did. And I'm going to talk about that more as we go on. Prabhupada read the abridged edition and the unabridged editions. Yes.
Maharaj, some people say that you changed Srila Prabhupada's words, but according to me trying to follow both of them, it seems like the exact meaning is there. But between...
Well, that's part of the purpose of this seminar, is so that you can judge for yourself, or you can have greater insight for yourself into what's been done, and you can make informed decisions or have informed opinions about what was done. Okay, any other questions about what we heard so far? Yes?
Yeah, very beginning I saw some website.
Yeah, I'll show you that in a moment. Anything else? Okay, actually that question is relevant. This, what we just looked at, along with a lot more, quite a bit more, is available on the World Wide Web. And the, well, let's see, we have to first escape here. And the address is there on the bottom. I don't know if you can see it. It's www.krishna.com/newsite.html. www.krishna.com/newsite/gita-revs-explained.html. Is there a zoom on this, I wonder? Well, of course, we zoom slot first of all. 47. Let's see what that does for us. That doesn't do anything for us. Okay, that shows better. www.krishna.com, new site, Gita Revs Explained. You'll find about 150, more than 150 individual revisions side by side in the format that we've just looked at. along with explanations. The old edition, the new edition, the manuscripts, side by side, along with comments where they seemed like they might be helpful. In fact, there it is. There's your question more thoroughly. Prabhupada wrote the Bhagavad Gita as it is during 1966 and 67. The abridged edition was published in 68, and the first unabridged edition in 72. In about 1980, at the request... 1972 was Macmillan Company. The BBT didn't exist yet. There was an ISKCON press, which was the forerunner of the BBT. Then in 1980, roughly, at the request of various devotees and the BBT trustees, I undertook a revision of the text. I consulted with Gopi Prana Prabhu and others about the Sanskrit. For the English, I consulted Rabindra Swarup Prabhu, Garuda Prabhu, and others. In 1982, the GBC discussed the work and approved, contingent on approval, by a panel of appointed to review the final revisions to the translations. The panel included Satsarup Maharaj, Harisari Prabhu, and other ISKCON leaders. They met for several days in Detroit, I was there, and approved or disapproved of various proposed revisions. In 1982, I sent a list of every proposed revision for the translations to virtually every ISKCON leader in the English-speaking world and asked for comments. In 1983, the BBT published the second edition, and in 1985, the GBC reaffirmed its endorsement of the second edition. Clear enough? Any questions about the history here? They do. They all come from the English, of course. Depending on which language we're in, some of them were translated from the first edition and some from the second. Some were translated from the first, some from the second, and some were originally translated from the first and then later revised following the second, depending on the maturity of the language. Like German, for example, was one of the earliest languages we've worked on. So I think that was originally translated from the first edition, and then again from the second edition. Usually when they do a revision of a foreign language, it's more because they're not happy with the way the foreign language translation was done. I don't think I know of any languages where they said, well, now there's a second edition in English, so let's do a second edition in Bulgarian or something. More often it's, you know, we translated that 10 years ago, the Bulgarian really needs upgrading, and while they're at it, they catch the second edition from the English. Any other questions so far? Yes?
I heard that when you sent out these revisions to the ISKCON leader, there was hardly
any. Yeah, there was. I did get some response in person because I met many of the devotees, and a little bit in the mail, but there was nothing major. There were some questions about individual points, but there was nothing very controversial. In the GBC meeting of probably 1982, one of our leading sannyasis, who is no longer with us, raised a quite vehement objection in the GBC to the second edition, and that's why the GBC appointed this panel. Then things were quiet after that, except that that same sannyasi was quite vocal afterwards. After he left the society, things quieted down. And then one of our other godbrothers, who was an ISKCON guru and no longer is, made it a sort of centerpiece of his message. And so things stepped up again. And at various times, various people have had things to say. But correct, before it was published, things were fairly quiet, with the exception of of that 1 year in Mayapur when a sannyasi did raise quite a lot of dust about it. Or some, you know, he raised questions, to be fair. Okay? Anything else?
Were there only revisions in the translation? Or
no,
the
translations and purports both have extensive revisions. In fact, most of the work you'll find in the purports. But I sent the translations because the translations are what people are sensitive about. We memorize translations. For us, that's the, you know, those are Krishna's words. So I deliberately sent out all the translations so that people could see. That's where your attention tends to focus. So I sent that out. Nobody asked to see the purports, and it would have been impractical to send all the revisions for the purports, although if anyone had asked, you know, they could have seen whatever they were interested in. Anything further thus far? Okay. Let's look at some objections. We'll look at them quite extensively, and you can move a little to the left there, Pramjit Prabhu. We'll look at some of the major objections that people have raised and see how deserving those objections are. I think you're a little bit out of focus now. There you go. And forgive me, I only this started using PowerPoint 2 days ago. You have to go up a little further because otherwise we're going to be over the window. There we go. So here's the first one. Srila Prabhupada ordered that after his departure, not a word of his books could be changed. Now, I should move back. And do I know how to move back? Let's see. Maybe I do? Yeah. There's an answer to that. I'm aware of no such instruction. You won't find it in the folio. I was an editor during Srila Prabhupada's time. I never got any such instruction that after his departure, not a word of his books could be changed. So those who are raising this objection might be asked, when Prabhupada gave this order, to whom he gave this order. I'm not aware of any such instruction. The next is, did Srila Prabhupada ever ask you to revise Bhagavad Gita as it is? And the answer is no. But since when does everything require a specific request? I went on Padayatra for 1.5 years. Prabhupada never asked me to do that. Took sannyas in 1978. Prabhupada never asked me to do that. I'm editing Brihad Bhagavatamrita and the BBT is publishing that book. Prabhupada never asked us to do that. So where do we get this philosophy? You can only do something if Srila Prabhupada personally ordered you to do it. For that matter, did he ever order you to criticize his editors? Without having received the order, you're busy doing it. So which way does it cut? Prabhupada told me to edit. He never told me to stop. So I'm continuing my prescribed duty. It's standard in the publishing industry that when errors are detected in published works, they're corrected. Who authorized you to make these revisions? These revisions are unauthorized. The BBT directors, first of all, at the time I did the work, I was just a rank and file editor, and I had no post, but the people who were in charge of the BBT authorized that it be done. The Governing Body Commission, the highest managerial authority in ISKCON, authorized it. The devotees themselves, senior devotees all over the movement, were consulted. And ultimately, Srila Prabhupada himself. Now, we already heard that Prabhupada never told me to revise Bhagavad Gita as it is, so what am I talking about?
This is a letter from 1972, September 19th, from Pradyumna Das. Pradyumna was Srila Prabhupada's personal Sanskrit editor and traveled with him wherever he went to assist him in editing his books. One time, Srila Prabhupada, when he received a new edition of Bhagavatam, he said, actually, Panditji, Prabhupada used to call him Panditji. That was his affectionate nickname. Panditji has worked so hard that practically it's his book. So Prabhupada had a great deal of appreciation for him. And this is a letter he wrote to me or Radha Balava, the press manager, I forget which. Here's an important point. Srila Prabhupada was looking at the new edition of Second Canto the other day, and he called me up because he had found some mistakes. Prabhupada said, if there is one mistake in one book, then you spoil the whole book, murder the whole book. So also, besides Sanskrit editors, Sanskrit errors, there have been many, many English errors also, which are very obvious. So Prabhupada has been emphasizing lately about the great need for making our books free from errors. What's done has been done. That's Prabhupada. But now we should try to do two things. Make sure that errors like these won't occur again, and start a listing of past mistakes in each book so that we can correct them when they are reprinted. Of course, I'm about the most faulty person about, but we have to do something to eliminate all errors in the book. These were known instructions to the people who worked in the BBT during Srila Prabhupada's lifetime. And these were our standard operating principles. The BBT during Srila Prabhupada's life became, from a startup of totally inexperienced devotees, a reasonably professional publishing organization. And we had standards, which we got from Prabhupada himself. And one of our standards was chase down errors and get rid of them. So as I mentioned, I'm continuing to do what Srila Prabhupada instructed when he was present. Of course, I'm not doing it these days. I'm no longer the person in charge of error chasing. But the BBT is still doing that work. In 1976, I received personal instructions from Srila Prabhupada. The Srimad Bhagavatam first canto was edited roughly at the same time as Bhagavad Gita as it is. And in 1976 or thereabout, I took upon myself the revision of the first canto. Not all of it, but especially the first two chapters I felt needed a lot of revising. And so I did that work. And I typed up all the revised translations and put them in an envelope. And when Srila Prabhupada came to New York City in 1976, I thought that I would give this to Srila Prabhupada so that he could look them over and give his approval or disapproval or comments. So I went up to the top floor of the Hare Krishna building on 55th Street when Srila Prabhupada was staying there. And when I came in, I thought, I'll just leave this with the secretary and go. But Srila Prabhupada was right there, and he immediately dealt with it. Prabhupada had me sit down and start reading. So I began reading the first few verses, and Srila Prabhupada listened attentively. And then Prabhupada interrupted me. And Prabhupada said, so, what you have done? And I said, well, Srila Prabhupada, I've revised the verses mainly to make them closer to what you originally said. Prabhupada said, what I have said? I said, yes, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, then it is all right. Then it is all right. Now, that was the personal instruction I received about this Srimad Bhagavatam. And maybe this is a good time to tell you about some parallels between the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita as it is. forgive the clunky program this is in. Both books were originally edited at roughly the same time, the 1960s, late 1960s. They were edited originally by the same person, originally edited without the help of an experienced Sanskrit editor. And they were edited before the chanting of the Sanskrit slokas and recitation of the word for word became a regular part of ISKCON classes. We take that for granted now, but back in those old days, classes as we know them had not yet been instituted. We used to read the translation in purport and speak. There was no Jayarada Madhava, there was no Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, there was no recitation of the Sanskrit. We didn't go through the word for word. We just basically read the translation in purport, and then the devotee would speak something from whatever he knew, which wasn't all that much in those days compared to what we know now. So this original work was done before the classes were instituted. The original editing was approved by Srila Prabhupada. The original version included many omissions and mistakes in both books. Srila Prabhupada heard and read the original version. He expressed no objection to the original version. Both books were revised at roughly the same time, late 70s, early 80s. Of course, Bhagavad Gita, as it is, was done after Prabhupada's disappearance, Bhagavatam, during his presence. Both books were revised by the same person. Both books were revised with the help of an experienced Sanskrit editor. And for both books, the purpose was to restore omitted text and correct the mistakes. So I therefore take it that the instruction that I received from Srila Prabhupada in the 1976 is relevant to the work that I did later. In September 1976, when the first canto as revised was going into production, Radha Balavadas, who was our production manager at the BBT, apparently wrote to Srila Prabhupada to say, well, is this okay? You know, I've said, Jaidwaita Swami has said that this is approved, but is it really? And Prabhupada gave this reply. Concerning the editing of Jayadvaita Prabhu, whatever he does is approved by me. I have confidence in him. Embarrassing as it may be, both for my critics and for me, you'll hardly find a more sweeping authorization from Srila Prabhupada to anyone, anywhere. Whatever he does is approved by me. I have confidence in him. Any questions so far?
Maharaj, just an observation really. On the first slide where you raised this point about Srila Prabhupada saying that his books should never be changed, and this instruction doesn't exist anywhere, Srila Prabhupada has given a more general instruction about a disciple, that what makes a guru is a guru repeats exactly the words of his spiritual master. Without changing anything. Perhaps you could comment on that.
Yeah, these things have been introduced that Prabhupada says, don't add anything, don't subtract anything, don't change anything. And Prabhupada said this millions of times. It was an instruction that Prabhupada repeated again and again and again. Don't add, don't subtract, don't change. That's the duty of the disciple. But it's not the duty of an editor. It's not the duty of an editor. Don't add anything, don't subtract anything, don't change anything. Then what are you doing? Sitting there and watching? The duty of the editor is to add something, subtract something, and change something. That's his duty. Not whimsically, not to satisfy his own literary aspirations or his own whims.
The spoken word is different from the written word, isn't it? And these books were spoken into a dictation.
Well, some of them were spoken and some of them were written. And some of them were both. Chaitanya Charitamrita includes both written and spoken material. Bhagavad Gita, as it is, includes both written and spoken. Bhagavatam, written up through part of third canto, and after that it's all spoken. Chaitanya Charitamrita also, after first few chapters of Adi Lila, is all spoken. But even for the written material, Prabhupada wanted editors. It's not that Prabhupada considered that whatever he'd put on the page was what should be published exactly as it was. Prabhupada engaged originally Hayagriva to put it into proper English. Prabhupada admitted in his Bhagavatam that certainly there'll be failings in presenting the subject matter, especially in a foreign language. English wasn't Prabhupada's mother tongue. So Prabhupada said, but you know, the honest reader will pick up the importance of the subject matter. But after Prabhupada got a competent person like Hayagriva to edit the English and make it proper, Prabhupada engaged him that way, and later he engaged me that way. So to take this instruction, never change anything, and then make that an instruction for editors, that means you should never change a single word, is absurd. It's utterly absurd. Because that's the duty of an editor, is to change. Now, the other duty of the editor is to preserve. The editor is not in the business of just changing for the sake of change. And his duty is to preserve particularly the message. The message should not be changed. Not that Krishna says, surrender to me, and you say, well, that means surrender to the unborn, beginningless something within Krishna. The purport, the meaning, can't be changed. That has to be preserved. But the language can be refined to make it proper grammatically. Sometimes Prabhupada would use the wrong word. For example, in Krishna book, in the dictation, Prabhupada said that Rukmini was wearing a padlock around her neck. You know what a padlock is? It's the thing that goes on a door. It's one of those big, heavy things with a key. That's a padlock. And what Rukmini most certainly must have been wearing around her neck was a locket, which is a delicate little piece of jewelry that ladies wear around their neck. So I changed that word. I confess, I changed padlock to locket. That was my duty. Not to say, well, Prabhupada put it that way. Must have, in his transcendental vision, he must have known that Rukmini, being transcendental to all material rules and conventions, was wearing a padlock for the pleasure of Krishna. You know, it's understood that Prabhupada was not a native English speaker, and sometimes he intended one thing and said another. And it was the duty of the English and Sanskrit editors to see that the text corresponded to what Srila Prabhupada intended. That required discretion. There were Sanskrit editors who were not chaste. They had their own ideas of what it should have been, and they overstepped Prabhupada. They thought they knew more than he did. That's why Prabhupada liked Pradyumna, because Pradyumna was very faithful to Srila Prabhupada's desire and very respectful of Srila Prabhupada. And therefore Prabhupada trusted him. A person who respects you and has no other desire than to present what you want to present is a person you can trust. And a person who's what Prabhupada called over-intelligent is a person that you can't trust. So Prabhupada had people he trusted among his editors, and he gave them the task of editing his work. And that includes Hayagriva. Prabhupada trusted him also to edit his work.
My English is not good.
Spanish?
No, I'm from Russian.
Russian, of course.
No, I want to ask this. The editors, they were experienced in Sanskrit or not? For example, at this time, you were experienced in Sanskrit to have right to revise Srila Prabhupada's text.
In 1972, when the book first was published, no one was experienced in Sanskrit. I didn't know anything about Sanskrit, really. And the Sanskrit editor at that time, who was Pradyumna Prabhu, was just learning how to transliterate the words, how to break them and put the hyphens in, how to decide what the case endings were, whether to say yogi or yogin in the text, this sort of thing. He was new. He had some knowledge, but he was new. Later, as we went on, we got several very experienced people became very expert just by doing the service. Pradyumna became quite a scholar in Sanskrit. Gopi Pranadana Prabhu became an excellent scholar. And there were other devotees who became quite knowledgeable in Sanskrit. I picked up something of a familiarity with some of the issues that Sanskrit involves, but I'm nothing like a Sanskritist. I can read Devanagari, and that's about it. Any other questions?
Mm-hmm. You were quoting that Srila Prabhupada said about your good self, whatever he does is approved by me.
Mm-hmm.
I have confidence in him.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell me where it's stated that, where this is stated?
Yeah, I can find that for you. Hold on a second. It's a letter to Radha Balava. It's a letter to Radha Balava, September 7th, 1976, from Vrindavan. Okay. Any other questions?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Prabhupada didn't object to the original edition of Srimad Bhagavatam or the original edition of Bhagavad Gita as it is. He didn't say, this is terrible, it should be revised. Neither book.
So he was satisfied.
He was satisfied. Mm-hmm. In fact, in the original Srimad Bhagavatam, before it first came out, right before we went to press, the press workers were aware that in the editing there were various discrepancies. And Satsarup Maharaj brought this to Srila Prabhupada's attention, that there are a lot of things that are just not... the fidelity is low in some areas. Things that doesn't correspond to what you said. Prabhupada said, print it. Just print it. Prabhupada's primary concern, not his only concern, but Prabhupada was intensely interested in getting his books published. And from what I saw, Prabhupada didn't go back. He didn't go back and say, okay, let's look at this book again and revise it. Prabhupada went forward and was working on the next book, the next book, the next book. Because even I asked myself, why didn't we do this work on Bhagavad Gita as it is when Prabhupada was here? And the answer, as far as I can sort it out, we were too busy. As soon as we finished one book, we had at one point like 20 books. 20? Yeah, 20 books piled up, waiting for us to catch up with Prabhupada. Where was the chance to go back and look at other books we'd already published?
Was it because he knew that time was running out, he wanted to get as much out as possible?
Well, certainly Prabhupada had that interest. He knew, he always said, that my time is limited, I could die at any moment. And he had a strong program for publishing as much as he could. Comes with a new edition, you're going to have a problem. We had this problem also during Prabhupada's presence, because as I mentioned, Macmillan published first an abridged edition and then the complete edition. And there are differences in the translation between the two. Some of the translations were revised, and so they're not the same.
But the meaning, the whole meaning is still the same?
In general. There's not that much in the translations of Bhagavad Gita that makes a substantial difference to the translations. There are some that do. Should I pick one? Just let's find one that's interesting. This should be, let's see. Let's see if I find it. Yeah. Rajas tamas cha vibhuya sattvam bhavati parata. Rajas sattvam tamas chaiva tamas sattvam rajas tata. Bhagavad Gita 14.10. Sometimes the mode of passion, this is the original, first edition, sometimes the mode of passion becomes prominent, defeating the mode of goodness, O son of Bharata. Sometimes the mode of goodness defeats passion, and at other times the mode of ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, there's always a competition for supremacy. Now, if you analyze that carefully, if you look at it, you'll find out that what's going on is that passion and ignorance are duking it out. Am I right? Passion and goodness are duking it out. And ignorance is sitting by the sidelines. Goodness becomes prominent, defeating... passion becomes prominent, defeating goodness. Doesn't it defeat ignorance also? Here's the comments. Sometimes the mode of passion becomes prominent, defeating the mode of goodness, O son of Partha. Doesn't it also defeat the mode of ignorance? Sometimes the mode of goodness defeats passion. Again, not ignorance too. And at other times, the mode of ignorance defeats goodness and passion. Right. In the old version, goodness and passion duke it out. That means they fight. But ignorance seems to stand on the sidelines, unmentioned. Ignorance shows up only when it defeats the other two. It never gets defeated, in other words. But clearly, that's not how the Sanskrit has it. As Srila Prabhupada says in his purport, when the mode of passion is prominent, the modes of goodness and ignorance are defeated. When the mode of goodness is prominent, passion and ignorance are defeated. And when the mode of ignorance is prominent, passion and goodness are defeated. This competition is always going on.
So if we take this example, mm-hmm. was that particular example on a tape or in writing?
It's in writing on the... This is 14th chapter. On the right-hand side, the book has already been edited somewhat. The oldest manuscript we have for that chapter was already somewhat edited. So we didn't have either a tape of Prabhupada or Prabhupada's original writing. But we do have the Sanskrit, which is very clear, and we have Prabhupada's purport, which is very clear. And you have common sense, which is very clear. It's not that goodness defeats only passion, or that passion defeats only goodness. Right? Goodness defeats passion and ignorance, and passion defeats goodness and ignorance. That's A, common sense, B, Sanskrit, and C, Prabhupada's purport. So therefore, the way it was published the first time is wrong. It's simply wrong. And even a common reader can look at it, scratch his head, and say, something's wrong here. And what to speak of anyone who knows Sanskrit or teaches Bhagavad Gita in a university? Or what to speak of a devotee? A devotee looks at it and says, that's wrong. So in the second edition, it's not wrong, it's right. That's an example. Yes, Vishwaprabhu.
Yeah, Maharaj, please clear my ignorance. I understand Srila Prabhupada said about approaching like the Gaudiya Math or other acharyas, mm-hmm. not to do that. He mm-hmm. said, if they change just one word that I say, it can change the whole meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand also another thought came in my mind that Prabhupada said, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, that my disciples have three diseases. They like to fight, they have sex problem, and they change things.
Prabhupada said, that is your American disease, always changing. But again, that's what Prabhupada engaged me doing. Maybe he knew that I was the most diseased person in the whole society. But that's what he had me doing for 10 years when he and I were both together. Not quite 10, I joined after 2 years. So 8 years while I was in the movement and he was present. He had me changing every day. That's what an editor does. He changes. Pardon me, did Prabhupada do the word-for-word translations? The word meanings? Yes, mostly Prabhupada did them. There were some few places where he tried having the Sanskrit editors do it in advance, and he found out that it didn't save him time. It was easier just for him to do it himself. So Prabhupada did the word for word. Yes. And the Sanskrit editors revised them also. Sometimes they'd look at it and they'd do some cleaning on it. Any other questions? Okay. Shall we go to the next objection? See if we're in the right place. Oh, that's just the beginning. Okay. This is one. There's something called Arsha Prayog. Even the mistakes of the Acharya must be respected. So people, and this is an instruction from Prabhupada, that it's essentially, in fact, you'll find in Sanskrit commentaries that sometimes something is ungrammatical according to the Sanskrit. Sometimes something doesn't seem to be quite right. And the commentator just writes Arsha, which means, roughly speaking, that's what the Rishi said. And we're not going to mess with it. It's his prerogative. So the sages or the great authorities have the prerogative even to make mistakes and to have them stand as they are. So then they say, well, why are you changing the books? Then if Prabhupada gave this sacred principle of Arsha Prayog, how dare you? And there's an answer. The mistakes of the Acharya must be respected, but the mistakes of his editors must not. Here's an example. This is Bhagavad Gita 2:40. And let's find it. All of these are on the website, by the way. I guess this is going to kick in a moment. Anyway, I can give you the introduction to this, and then we'll pray for the current to come back up. In Bhagavad Gita 2:40, Prabhupada quotes this verse: "Chaktva svadharmam charanam bhujam harer, bhajana pakvota pate tato yadi, yatra kvavadhadram abhudamushyakim, kovarta apto apajatam svadharmata." Okay. And I revised something there, and you'll find out, here it is, what it is. Original edition: if someone gives up self-gratificatory pursuits and works in Krishna consciousness and then falls down on account of not completing his work, what loss is there on his part? Now, when you look at the original manuscript, and in the second chapter, this means the manuscript typed by Prabhupada himself, it says, if somebody gives up his occupational duties. It doesn't say self-gratificatory pursuits, it says his occupational duties. And if you know the verse, chaktva svadharma, and you'll see in my comment, the verse says chaktva svadharma. Svadharma means his occupational duties, not self-gratificatory pursuits. So what is this? This is a mistake. Whose mistake is it? It's the editor's mistake. What right do they have to invoke Arsha Prayog to protect that mistake? No right. It's a mistake. Some editor took out his occupational duties, which perhaps in 1972 sounded like a very strange phrase, you know, occupational duties. Do you ever talk to somebody and say, excuse me, sir, what's your occupational duty? We don't say that. We say, you know, what do you do for a living? What's your job? But occupational duty? What is an occupational duty? Well, we know now, after so many years of study, that occupational duty means a very specific thing that you're told to do in terms of varna and ashram. You have particular duties to perform. But back then, perhaps occupational duty sounded just like a wordy way of saying things. So one of the editors changed it to self-gratificatory pursuits. But svadharmam very definitely means one's occupational duties, or one's dharma. Dharma is not self-gratificatory pursuit. It's an editorial mistake. Any other questions? Okay. Here's another example. 231. Let's find this. By the way, if you have any favorite verses that you have questions about what happened, you can bring them. This is Bhagavad Gita 2:31, last sentence of the purport. Discharging one's specific duty in any field of action in accordance with varnashram dharma serves one to elevate one to a higher status of life. And I took out the word varnashram dharma and made it the orders of higher authorities. Why? Because the manuscript, again typed by Prabhupada, says, to discharge one's specific duty in any field of action and as ordered by higher authority is the opportunity for being elevated in higher status of life. Well, this became a hot topic in the Varnashram Development Conference on COM, which is now called Pam Ho, under the subject heading, Editing Varnashram Dharma Out of the Books. And as you can see, no, we're not editing Varnashram Dharma out of the books, but we're editing Prabhupada's original words back into the books here. That's another example of an editorial mistake. Yes? No, he passed away quite a number of years ago now, so he's no longer present.
Was he around when you were re-editing his work?
Was he around when I was re-editing his work? He'd taken some leave of absence for Krishna consciousness for a number of years, and I did the work essentially during that time. He was sometimes in, sometimes out, and sometimes half in and half out. And that's when, or that was the status of things when I did the editorial revision. I think at that time he was more out than in. Did he comment on it? Not that I know of. He may have had some comments, but I'm not aware of them. I did hear that at the end of his life, he was very regretful of the things that he'd done that were not Krishna conscious and the time that he'd spent outside of Prabhupada's service, and had said that, you know, if I had just been more steady, I could have done so much more service, which was true because he was a very capable and very intelligent and talented person. And Prabhupada appreciated the service that he did. Okay. And we're waiting for our power to come back. Are there other questions while we're waiting?
I love comments.
Okay, sure, comment.
It was right around the late 60s. I joined in San Francisco in 1968. And then I went to L.A., and then I was a little shocked because I read the first three volumes of Srila Prabhupada's original books, Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, and I was shocked because so many mistakes there. And I was thinking to myself, my useless, stupid self, well, Srila Prabhupada's a pure devotee. How can pure devotee make so many mistakes? So I called Purandar in L.A., and he was GBC in charge there. And he said, if a pure devotee makes mistakes, even a pure, that enhances the mistakes.
That's true. We very much appreciated those original Bhagavatams with their unrefined, unedited English. And they were later reprinted in a kind of commemorative edition by the Bhaktivedanta Archives. And there is a special taste to Prabhupada's unrefined, unedited language. It's very tasty and very wonderful. And we read those books, as Vishal Prabhu rightly says, in that spirit. Let there be mistakes, we don't mind, we just want to get the substance. And it became even tastier sometimes to see Srila Prabhupada's unrefined English. Now, what's happening here? Now, there's Bijli Hai. So, what's happening? The extension box is working fine. I'm getting power from here. You want to? No, my computer is getting power. Try plugging this in. I can work off of existing juice for a while. Now just pull this out. Okay, is it coming back? Do you have to press an on button or something for something to happen? It's coming. Okay. So in conclusion, okay. You can turn that light off. So the idea that Arsha Prayog means that the very idea of editing is offensive is weird. If editing must be offensive, then what did Prabhupada want editors for? We had that attitude, in fact, while we were editing, that it's a little, the editor has to adjust his consciousness, that I'm editing the words of a pure devotee. How can I be doing that? Every word that comes out of his mouth is perfect. How can I be changing any of them? So we took it that it was Krishna's arrangement, that just to give us some service to do, Krishna arranged in such a way that Prabhupada would speak in less than perfect English. This is service. What can we do? If Prabhupada had said, don't change a single word, just print it as exactly as I've dictated it, we would have done that.
But Prabhupada asked for editing.
Now
the current's off. They'll just have to. There's running to do it. You can sit, Pramji. By the way, those little Bhagavad Gita chanting books are, some of them are lined up here. If you like them, they're available from me. Give a little bakshish, whatever you want. They're published by the BBT. And there's no controversy about the translations because there aren't any. Except the only controversy is, why aren't there any translations? But they're meant to be a chanting book for reciting the Sanskrit slokas.
In December when you recite only the Sanskrit part?
Yeah.
And it's so hard to follow. If you lose one, you are lost.
Yeah. For those, Prabhupada actually one time recommended that we recite a chapter of Bhagavad Gita every day in Sanskrit. So these little books can help you do that. And I find it very useful for giving classes or for recite. I'd recite a chapter every day just by having this little book. It becomes very easy. You can take it anywhere. So if this book appeals to you, they're lined up over there. And we have a little bit more time, so we'll use it for something. Here's the next objection. Okay, you could fix a few typographical errors, but not more than that. Here's our critic. There are some typographical errors in the 1972 printing, and if Jayadwaita had simply corrected the obvious typos, no one would have been at all concerned. Answer, thank you for making my point. That is, practically everyone agrees that some revisions are required. It's just a question of which ones. And as you'll see, there are compelling reasons for the other revisions as well. And you've seen some of them now, and there's a lot more to show. Then here's the next one. You're changing the meaning of Srila Prabhupada's words. This is on the internet. There are hundreds of changes that completely alter the meaning of what Srila Prabhupada says in the original book. Answer, yes, there are. But you're assuming that whatever is in the original book is what Srila Prabhupada said. And that assumption is wrong. Now let's take some examples. Well, we just looked at one, 231. The orders of higher authorities, not Varnashram Dharma. Let's look at another one, 240. Well, we looked at that one too, Jaktvasadharmam Charanam Bhujam Harer. Again, change. Let's see what we have here, 234. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. And I change that. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. This particular revision became controversial. I heard from a correspondent that in Bangalore, some devotees were disturbed. And this for them was evidence that Bhagavad Gita as it is wasn't really as it is. And they pointed out that the 72 edition did not contain this sentence about the inability to progress by independent study of books. The sentence had been added by the GBC, so the critics charged, to support a guru system that Prabhupada never desired. So I take that as a sign that restoring this sentence from Srila Prabhupada's manuscript was worth doing. Then there's a little analysis I did of how that sentence went missing. Shall we go through it? Okay. How did the missing portion go missing? Here's a guess, educated guess. Suppose the original editor did the text this way. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path, nor can independent study of books of knowledge help one progress to spiritual life. If you jump from the first help to
to the second, leaving out everything between, a very common sort of typist error, you get precisely what was published in the first edition. The first edition was typeset on a now extinct IBM composing machine, on which each typeset line had to be typed twice, making this sort of error even more likely. When you notice that in the first edition the word help comes at the end of a line, you can figure that you've pretty well solved the case. The typesetting person left out one complete line. The second edition restores it. This fix illustrates the sort of work done for the second edition of Bhagavad Gita as it is, and the response to it illustrates how an over-suspicious mind and a hyperactive imagination can turn a typist's error into an international conspiracy. Clear enough? Further from our critics, the really serious changes are the ones where the philosophy is changed or watered down in the new version of the Bhagavad Gita. There are many such changes. And then he gives an example. On the other hand, he who controls the senses by the mind and engages his active organs in work of devotion without attachment is by far superior. But in the revised edition, on the other hand, if a sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind and begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness without attachment, he is by far superior. The critic says, so one does not have to be a great scholar to notice controlling the senses by the mind and engaging in works of devotion is not the same as trying to control the senses and beginning karma yoga. Do we no longer have to control our senses and engage in works of devotion? Is it enough to just try to control our senses? There are so many changes like this. Well, let's take a look at that one. Bhagavad Gita 3.7. Original manuscript. On the other hand, if a sincere person tries to control the active sense organs and begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness without being attached, he is by far the better. There are so many changes like this. Changing it back to what Srila Prabhupada said. Clear?
Those are all archived.
Pardon me?
All archived.
Everything that's here on the right-hand side is in the archives, in their storage, yes. And what it is differs according to the chapter. Up through about the first six chapters, they have manuscripts typed by Srila Prabhupada himself. Brahmananda Prabhu told me that Prabhupada used to type with two fingers sitting in his room in New York City. Those manuscripts, signed on the back page of each chapter, are there in the Bhaktivedanta archives. From someplace in chapter 6, or for sure in chapter 7, it becomes dictation. And for chapters 7 through 12, roughly, the original transcriptions are there in the archives. And they're a mess, let me tell you. And after that, the original transcriptions have been lost for chapters 13 through 18. They're no longer existing. And all that we have is a version retyped from those original transcriptions, but partly edited. I was the person who retyped them. It was one of my first jobs back in probably 1968. I retyped them from a partly edited version of the transcription. And I was surprised in 1982, roughly, when I went to look for those transcriptions, that the original transcriptions were no longer there. I was no longer in charge of the BBT at that time, or ISKCON Press, and I thought that the originals would be there as well as the retyped version, but they weren't. So we have Prabhupada's original typing for roughly the first six chapters, the transcriptions of the dictations for the middle six, and the retyped, partly edited version for the last six. And that is all at the archives, yes. And we're out of time, but I'll take one more question anyway. Go ahead.
Putting this out.
Yeah, there's a... Our, our, what's your name, Prabhu?
My name is Bhaktayan.
Bhaktayan, from North European BBT, who, Hare Krishna, who worked on the a project there and got to see the original manuscripts and compare them and saw that they, the second edition is considerably more faithful to those manuscripts. And he says, well, maybe these people are criticizing because they don't know there are original manuscripts. Well, they have been informed that there are original manuscripts. And when that point is made in, to them, originally it seems like they just pretended that there was no such thing. They just said, here's edition A, here's edition B, they're different, so this is a deviation. Then when someone like me came up and said, hey, folks, there's a manuscript, now their latest response to that is, what are these dubious manuscripts? What are these dubious manuscripts? So it has been suggested that they be published, and I myself have thought of that, but there's a reason that we don't publish them. And let me find that. One reason, of course, is that Srila Prabhupada gave permission at one point that they be kept under lock and key and not published. But let me see if I can find my letter to that one boy about why we don't publish them. Let me see if I have it here for you. Not everyone is happy with this particular response, but I... This is a letter to a devotee named Deepak in London. Surely this whole controversy can be laid to rest if Srila Prabhupada's original manuscripts were made available for public viewing. And here's my response. I wish that were so. Unfortunately, these days, nothing lays any controversy to rest. This is Kali, the age of quarrel. However worthless, arguments will go on and on and on. Anyway, in regard to the books, just by seeing two different editions of a book, some people are such idiots that they'll automatically assume that everything in the first edition must be as it is, and everything in the second must be the editor's deviations. When some people are such fools that they'll jump to such worthless conclusions and mouth off about it with little or no restraint, what will they do if you give them an original manuscript to feast on? I'll tell you what they'll do. They'll quibble over every second word. The fools will show their pride in being common sense readers, devotees of the real books, upholders of strict adherence to the parampara, and they'll do what a baby does if you give it money. Play with it, drool over it, and tear it all up. And so, to quote good advice from another tradition's scripture, give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn again and rend you. The internet is full of fine devotees, including devotees with honest questions about the editing of books. But unfortunately, it's also a place of dogs and swine. What can be done? Foreseeing how original manuscripts might be argued over and misused, Ramachar Swami, while in charge of the BBT in the 1970s, suggested to Srila Prabhupada that the BBT make available only the published books and keep the manuscripts under lock and key. And Srila Prabhupada agreed. Nonetheless, taking the spirit of your suggestion, I think it would be helpful for honest and reasonable devotees to have a better idea not only of how edition one differs from edition two, but also how they both compare to the original manuscripts. So with that in mind, we've created this website, which has lots and lots of examples. I answer any questions that people send me, and we have this seminar where you're also welcome to ask as many questions as you like.
We also do have a plan underway at the BBT to eventually make the manuscripts available, but it will probably be after the volcano has cooled. Well, what kind of public? I've used a couple of choice words for some of those members of the public here in this text. There are all sorts of people who have criticisms. Some are very intelligent devotees with legitimate concerns, and they generally tend to write to me rather than throw it all up on the internet. There are devotees. There seems to be a positive statistical correlation between people who are heavy critics of the second edition of Bhagavad Gita and people who believe that you can become Srila Prabhupada's disciple by being initiated by a Ritvik even after his physical departure. There's a positive correlation there. In other words, the Ritviks are really into this. There's also a correlation between, also some of the critics are people who have recognized personal agendas and who later fell down from Krishna consciousness because of those recognized personal agendas. So there are all sorts of reasons why people criticize, from very intelligent, very legitimate reasons to really scoundrel stuff.
So all in all, would you say there are more positive comments than negative?
Pardon me?
All in all,
yeah, I'd say the critics represent a small but vocal minority. A small but very vocal minority. And there's a substantial number of people who are just not familiar with the issues and read propaganda put out and get disturbed. I meet a lot of people like that, basically innocent devotees who've read that things have been irresponsibly changed, that Prabhupada said not a word can be changed and they're changing it, that they're changing the meanings, that you know all this stuff that you're seeing here. And then people see that and they think, my God, the sky is falling. And they get disturbed. So my experience is that when things are presented in the fashion in which we're presenting them on the web or in this seminar, where you can see the original manuscript and the revisions and where you can find out the reason where things were done, most people are satisfied. And some people, either because they're obstinate or because they have legitimate concerns that they don't feel are adequately answered, are not satisfied. But most devotees are quite satisfied. Okay, we will end because we are over time. Thank you all very much.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Shaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gaudavani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarane.
Welcome or welcome back. We're continuing with our explanation of how Srila Prabhupada's books are edited, especially in Bhagavad Gita as it is. Yesterday we talked about some of the history of the editing for this book, and we also began discussing various objections that people have put forward. So today we'll continue with those objections, but as yesterday we began with Srila Prabhupada speaking from the introduction of Bhagavad Gita as it is, today we have another clip of Srila Prabhupada, this one with video. This was put together by Govindadas of the North European BBT, and it will show you some of the difficulties that the transcribers had to face when they were dealing with Srila Prabhupada's transcriptions. I think it's pretty clear. You'll get to see Yadubara Prabhu filmed Srila Prabhupada dictating. So you'll first see the film in which Srila Prabhupada is doing everything, and then you'll hear what the transcribers got on the tape. I think it's quite illuminating. Now let's see. You get a blank screen. Okay, I'm just going to give you the audio for this.
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives in this connection a description of difference of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and ordinary living being. So this is difference of the Supreme Personality of God and ordinary living being.
Here Srila Prabhupada is listening to himself.
This has been described in the previous verse. Sarvam pumana vida gunan sutatya naveda sarvagga mananta mire. The purpose is that Supreme Lord, He is omnipotent, omniscient. He knows everything. But the living being does not know actually what is the position of the Supreme Personality of God. That is the difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and ordinary living being.
Now here's what the transcribers heard. The tapes were given to the transcribers.
Difference of the Supreme Personality of God and ordinary living being. Difference of the Supreme Personality of God and ordinary living being.
Once more.
Difference of the Supreme Personality of God and ordinary living being. Difference of the Supreme Personality of God and ordinary living being.
That was taken again from Yadavar's video. Okay, I apologize for not having our video more together there today. Okay. That gives you some insight into the sort of work that was being done back then and what some of the difficulties were. Now I'm going to show you a slideshow, also by Govinda Das, which illustrates some of the errors in Bhagavad Gita as it is, first edition, and what's going on with them. Move forward. Okay. This is from second chapter of Bhagavad Gita as it is. This realization is made possible by working with the fruit of being situated in the fixed conception of the real self. Would anyone like to hazard an explanation of what this means? This realization is made possible by working with the fruit of being situated in the fixed conception of the real self. You're giving a Bhagavad Gita class. Now explain this sentence.
Some people might have tried to explain it.
Yeah, I've heard people try to explain it. Okay. Here's the original manuscript. This realization is possible by working with fruitive result being situated on fixed up conclusion of the real self. You'll see next to with that someone has inserted without, which is actually the correct thing. This realization is possible by working without fruitive result, being situated on fixed up conclusion of the real self. In smoother grammar, that's this realization is possible when one works without attachment to fruitive results and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
Okay. Here's another one. This is Namam Duspita Namudha Prapadyante Namaradhama. That verse. The swine who eat the soil do not care to accept sweetmeats made of sugar and ghee. I had a problem with this when I first read Bhagavad Gita as it is, because I didn't understand what it meant, the swine who eat the soil. Is anyone here? We have a lot of swine around here, a lot of, apart from the comments I made yesterday about various critics, we also have...
Some on the road today during Preco.
Critics or...
Swine.
Swine. Yeah, we have a lot of swine of the four-legged kind here in Vrindavan. Have you seen any of them eating soil?
No.
No. So what's going on here? The swine. Here's the manuscript. The swine who eat the night soil. And you'll see that someone has put night in parentheses and put a question mark around it, presumably because they didn't know what the word night is doing there. Does anyone know what the word night is doing there? I'll explain to you what the word night is doing there. Here's the final published version. The swine who eat the night soil. Night soil is that stuff that we all know hogs love to eat. It's a polite euphemism for human excrement. That's what night soil is. Prabhupada knew. In the prayers of Kunti in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1.8.18, it is said that the Lord is covered by the curtain of Yoga Maya, and thus ordinary people cannot understand him. Kunti prays, O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the entire universe, and devotional service to you is the highest religious principle. Therefore I pray that you will also maintain me. Now there's a problem with that. Let's go to folio. Srimad Bhagavatam. A little slow here. Very slow here. Okay, 1.8.18. Kunti Uvacha, it is Kunti. She says, O Krishna, I offer my obeisances unto you, because you are the original personality and are unaffected by the qualities of the material world. You are existing both within everything and without everything, yet you are invisible to all. Namasye purusham tvajyam prakritim ishram prakrite param alaksham sarvabhutanam antarbahir avastitam. Now does that look to you like it matches? O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the entire universe, and devotional service to you is the highest religious principle. Therefore I pray that you will also maintain me. What's going on here? Here's the original manuscript. The prayer of Kunti in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that the Lord is covered by the curtain of Yoga Maya, and so ordinary people, they cannot understand. This Yoga Maya curtain is also confirmed in the blank in the 15th. Welcome, Raji.
Hare Krishna.
This Yoga Maya curtain is also confirmed in the 15th. It is said like this, blank space. In this mantra, the devotee prays, O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the entire universe. I'll just recap for you what's happening here. We're trying to figure out how in this purport to, I guess it's Yoga Maya Samavrita, in the prayers of Kunti in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.18, it is said that the Lord is covered by the curtain of Yoga Maya, and thus ordinary people cannot understand him. Kunti prays, O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the entire universe, and devotional service to you is the highest religious principle. Therefore I pray that you will also maintain me. But we looked at 1.8.18, and it looks like this. Namasye purusham tvajyam, and so on. I offer my obeisances unto you because you are the original personality and are unaffected by the qualities of the material world. You are existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible to all. We're trying to figure out how that matches this, what's printed in the original book. So we've gone to the original manuscript and we find this. The prayer of Kunti in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, blank, that the Lord is covered by the curtain of Yoga Maya. And so ordinary people, they cannot understand. This Yoga Maya curtain is also confirmed in the blank, in the 15th. It is said like this, blank, Sanskrit, presumably. In this mantra, the devotee prays, O my Lord, and so on. Okay, anyone have a clue what's happened here? Could be 15th verse, but if you look into 15th verse of 8th chapter, it's not even Kunti Devi speaking.
That won't work. 15th verse is, O Shonaka, although the supreme Brahmastra weapon released by Ashwatthama was irresistible. That's definitely not the verse. Okay, here's what it is. In the prayers of Kunti in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.19, let's look at that. Maya Javani Kachchannam. Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor covered by the curtain of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. That starts to fit, doesn't it? In the prayers of Kunti in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.19, it is said that the Lord is covered by the curtain of yoga maya, and thus ordinary people cannot understand him. This Yogamaya curtain is also confirmed in the Ishopanishad, Mantra 15, in which the devotee prays. Someone know the verse? Hiran mayena patrena satyasya pihitam mukham tatvam pushan pavarnu satya dharmaya drishtiye. O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the entire universe, and devotional service to you is the highest religious principle. Satya dharmaya drishtiye. Therefore I pray that you will also maintain me. Bhayam, fearlessness, is only possible for one in Krishna consciousness. Is that okay with everyone? Abhayam. There it is in Prabhupada's handwriting on the original manuscript. That looks to me like Prabhupada's handwriting. And there it is in the second edition. Abhayam, fearlessness. Simply wrong. Another one. The devotee demigods and the demons, asuras, once took a sea journey. On this journey, nectar and poison were produced, and Lord Shiva drank the poison. From the nectar were produced many entities, of which there was a horse named Uchchaisrava, and so on. Now, do you know this story about the demons and demigods taking a sea journey? There was journey of the sea. Okay? And in which the devotee demigods and the asuras took part, and there was production of nectar and poison also. So they took part in sea churning. They didn't go on an expedition or a Queen Elizabeth II tour or something like that. They were churning the sea. But back, you have to understand that back in 1968, 69, 70, even 72, devotees weren't really familiar with this story. They didn't know, they hadn't received that canto of Bhagavatam where the whole thing is explained. So it sounded good. Demigods and devotees went on a sea journey. There is also a planet of trees presided over by Aryama, who represents Krishna. This is a fairly famous one. We thought this was pretty far out. Wow, a planet of trees. But the verse is, Pitrinam Aryamas Chasmi. There's a planet of Pitris, ancestors. It's not a planet of trees. Sounds like, you know, one of those science fiction movies, Planet of the Trees. There's no such planet. It's the planet presided over by Aryama, who is in charge of the Pitris or Pitas, the ancestors.
Is that the movie? Hmm? Journey of the Demigods and the Demons to the Planet of the Trees?
Yeah, that's where they went, to the Planet of the Trees. Right. Sometimes we understand that I am happy, I am mad, I am a woman, I am a dog, I am a cat. These are the knowers. This is from the 13th chapter, the field and the knower of the field, Kshetra and Kshetragya. And Srila Prabhupada says that these are the knowers of the field. That when I understand that I'm happy, I'm mad, I'm a woman, I'm a dog, I'm a cat, these are the knowers of the field. Does that seem okay to you? So here, unfortunately, the manuscript doesn't really help us out, but we have to rely upon our understanding of Srila Prabhupada's teachings. Sometimes we think, I am happy, I am a man, I am a woman, I am a dog, I am a cat. These are the bodily designations of the knower. But the knower is different from the field, different from the body. Does that make sense to you? Is that what Srila Prabhupada taught? Does the first one make any sense to anybody? And that's the end of this little slideshow from Govinda Prabhu. This, by the way, for those who are not here, is a repository of maybe 150 or so, more than that, explanations for Bhagavad Gita revisions. www.krishna.com. /newsite/GitaRevsExplained.html. And there you'll find the first edition, the second edition, and the manuscript side by side, along with comments for well over 150 individual revisions, including some of the ones most often criticized. I'll keep it on there a minute longer. You can also just go to krishna.com and look up revisions, but this is where it'll take you. www.krishna/newsite/GitaRevsExplained.html. Okay, now we'll continue with some of the objections that people have given. We've dealt with maybe almost a dozen yesterday, and here we shall continue. Most of the revisions make no improvement. They are change for the sake of change. There are thousands of changes which are completely unnecessary. Change for the sake of change. Most of the changes make no significant improvement to the book. Thousands of petty changes which apparently do not change the meaning. Well, I'm glad, first of all, that they don't change the meaning. Thousands of needless changes. This is really an uninformed criticism, because the critics don't see why a given revision is necessary. They jump to the conclusion that it's not. This is particularly laughable when the critic speaks English as a second language. One of the loudest critics on the internet is an Austrian. And his English is, well, he could use a good editor. Here's an example from Bhagavad Gita as it is, 7th chapter, text 4. This list, by the way, is partial list of the verses that you'll find on that website. Okay, 7.4. This is one. Could you move that, please, to the right? Slightly. Okay. Bhumirapo nalo vayu kam mano buddhireva cha hankara mitya me binna prakritirashtada. This is one of those petty changes. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, all together, these eight constitute my separated material energies. Well, here's one of those petty change for the sake of change little things that we did. We took the word all together, one word, and made it two words, all together. And here's why. This is the Random House Dictionary. The forms altogether, one word, and altogether, two words, though often indistinguishable in speech, are distinct in meaning. The adverb altogether means wholly, entirely, completely, and altogether confused report.
The phrase all together means in a group. The children were all together in the kitchen. Which is the right one in this verse?
Two words.
All the eight elements together constitute the Lord's material energies. So this is one of the thousands of changes for the sake of change that you hear about. Okay. Any questions? By the way, your questions are invited and welcome.
Did you find any already's and already's?
No, I didn't find an already and already. Is there one?
Just curious.
Huh?
I was just curious.
No, I didn't find that one. That's another, yes, similar one. Already, as in the boys were all ready, and already, as in let's get going already. It's a similar trap in English. This complaint about thousands of small changes is what's now being made by those who found out that the big changes they were complaining about are justified. Now, here's something that's lately come up. We've been hearing about Prabhupada's Adi Vani. This is a slogan, not an argument. It's an example of how to juggle words to mislead. Adi Vani literally means original language or original words. But the sloganeers have given it a new meaning, the words originally published. I'll show you how that works. Five sixteen. Therefore, one has to seek out such a bona fide spiritual master. I should explain for those who weren't here yesterday, what's crossed out, what's in normal type is what's in both books. What's crossed out is what's only in the first edition and not the second. And what's in bold is only in the second edition, not the first. So here's the first edition. Therefore, one has to seek out such a bona fide spiritual master and under him learn what Krishna consciousness is. The spiritual master can drive away all nescience as the sun drives away darkness. That's the first edition. And that's what's called the Adi Vani, or Prabhupada's original words. Now here's the manuscript. Therefore, one has to find out such bona fide spiritual master who is perfect Krishna consciousness and has to learn under such bona fide spiritual master what is Krishna consciousness. Such Krishna consciousness will certainly drive away all kinds of nescience, as the sun drives away all kinds of darkness. Here's the second edition. One has to learn what Krishna consciousness is, for Krishna consciousness will certainly drive away all nescience. So according to the Adi Vani people, what's in the first edition is Prabhupada's original words. What's in the second edition is a deviation. And what this is, we don't know. In other words, what Prabhupada actually said isn't counted in this as Adi Vani. It's only what's originally published, even though it's different from what he originally said.
Like if you tell me something, and then I write the note and give to him,
and you write it wrong,
I say, no, what he said is not important. What I wrote on the note is.
Yeah, I write, give me some milk. He mishears me and writes it. I say, give me some milk. He writes down to somebody else, give Jayadvaita Swami some water. Mm-hmm. Now, what he said, what he wrote down is the Adi Vani, the original language. Mm-hmm. And what I said doesn't count. Mm-hmm. And if somebody comes along and says, no, he wanted water, you're deviating, Prabhu.
What is the original thing?
We've got the Adi Vani right here. That's what's going on. Here's another example, 3:10.
Well, isn't that kind of what you're saying to them, is that Prabhupada, this is the original manuscript, this is the Adi Vani, if someone else wrote something.
Yeah, let's talk about Adi Vani.
They're turning it around, they're saying, no, the second is first and the first is second.
Exactly, it's twisted.
Who typed that manuscript?
Let's see what chapter that was. Let's go back. 516, Prabhupada. First six chapters were personally typed by Srila Prabhupada.
Hmm? That was that
Yeah, that old typewriter with old Underwood or whatever it was.
The original manuscript.
Brahmananda Prabhu told me that Srila Prabhupada was typed with two fingers up in his room.
The original manuscript.
Up through about chapter 6.
F didn't work on it or something?
Excuse me?
The F didn't work so well.
The F?
I noticed in the manuscript.
Oh, I didn't notice.
So Prabhupada typed the original manuscript, and then who...
Okay, now I should explain what original manuscripts mean. I don't think we talked about this yesterday. Yes, we did talk, but I'll repeat it. Up through, perhaps, definitely through chapter 5 and perhaps most or all of chapter 6, the original manuscripts mean the manuscripts typed by Srila Prabhupada himself and signed on the back of each chapter with a date. Those are the original manuscripts for the first 6 chapters. After that, Prabhupada began dictating. And the original manuscripts for chapters 7 through 13, give or take a few pages, are the original copies of the transcriptions. All of this is in the Bhaktivedanta archives.
You have the original tapes and
the... The tapes are gone. There's an exception. The introduction is taped. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada himself taped it, and it's available from the Bhaktivedanta archives. And yesterday we compared a portion of that tape to a portion of the text. It was very interesting, I think. So for the introduction, the original is the tape. For the first 6 chapters, Prabhupada's typed manuscripts. For the next 6 chapters, the original transcriptions of the dictation. And they're a real mess, too. You can take a look at some of them. For the last 6 chapters, the original transcriptions are gone. They were retyped in 1968, roughly, by a new devotee named Jayadwaita Das, me, who had the job of retyping the entire thing. And when I did that retyping, I kept the editing done by that had been done so far. So whatever the editor had crossed out, got crossed out. Whatever he changed, got changed. And someplace along the line, the original dictations for the last 6 chapters got lost. So all we have is my retyped version, which still offers value because there were things that hadn't been crossed out yet which are still there. But it's not as valuable because there's lots of places where you say, I know something's going on here, but I don't know what it is. If I could only see the original transcriptions, I could get a better idea. But those transcriptions are lost. Okay? Now, 3:10. This is another example of one of those thousands of changes for the sake of change. This is the text of the verse. Be thou happy by this yajna sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you all desirable things. That's the original first edition. And that is what's being called Adivani. Here's the second edition. Be thou happy by this yajna sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. That's a deviation. Here's the original manuscript. Looks a lot like the second edition, doesn't it? Give you all desirable for living happy and happily and achieving liberation.
Why didn't you change it to all that is desirable?
I could have. I suppose I was picking up from things.
Yeah.
All that is desirable would have been equally good, perhaps a spot better. Any questions here? I should also add that we have had the benefit when we were revising for the second edition of having on hand Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary on Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, and Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan's commentary, all of which it appears that Srila Prabhupada consulted. Living happily and achieving liberation is the translation given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur for this verse. Prabhupada wasn't making it up. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in some places, he doesn't give commentary, he just retranslates the verse in such a way that the marma, the essence of the verse, is included in the translation. Just as Prabhupada does in Krishna book, Krishna tells the gopis, as I say in Bhagavad Gita,
So that, of course, is Prabhupada's way of explaining the purport. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur does the same thing, and Srila Prabhupada is following Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur here in what I consider to be the actual Adivani. Any questions? Okay. This is another example. This is chapter 7, text 18. Let me find that for you here. Not here, here. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 9.4.57, the Lord says, Aham bhakta paradhino hyasvatantra ivadvija sadhurabhir grashta hridayo bhaktar bhakta janatpriya. The devotees are always in my heart, and I am always in the hearts of the devotees. The devotee does not know anything but me, and I also cannot forget the devotee. There is a very intimate relationship between me and the pure devotees. Pure devotees